Hello and happy new year from the Snooker Scene podcast. I'm Dave Hendon and we're looking forward to the Masters, of course, which starts on Sunday, the first big event of 2020. Michael McMullen is alongside me to go through the matches and maybe see if we can pick some sort of winner. But I guess we've got to start. Well, we're not starting so much with the elephant in the room as the elephant that's not in the room, which is Ronnie O'Sullivan hasn't entered, or apparently did enter and then pulled out, whatever, he's not playing in it. I guess it's a shame for the tournament, but life goes on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's it come to when, you know, you're talking about the greatest player in Masters history, maybe the greatest player in history, full stop. He's got a chance to play in the Masters and add to his seven titles, and he's just deciding not to do it. I mean, it's just such a strange decision to make, even by Ronnie O'Sullivan's standards, and we know he's missed big tournaments in the past. I think the only time he ever missed the Masters, though, was the year that he wasn't playing in anything. I don't think he missed it any other year.
He turned up.
To watch
the semi-final between Mark Selby and Graham Dott. Two players didn't like playing.
I think he's going to regret it as soon as the tournament starts and he's watching it. I don't know if he's doing any media work on it or whatever. And I think he'll think to himself, I really should be there. You've got to look at it and say, if you're being honest about it, the most obvious explanation you can come up with is that he's still shaken by what happened to him in the final last year. He got out-Ronnied, you know, was the sort of thing that he's done to players in Masters and in Masters finals so many times over the years. And it got done to him. And I think it's part of a wider picture as well, that you think back over the last 15 years, most of which he wasn't ranked number one, O'Sullivan was pretty much always regarded as the best player, even perhaps by some people in that year he wasn't playing. Now, I don't think he is regarded in that way anymore. I think people now do feel that even if everyone is playing and everyone's giving it a full go, that Judd Trump is now the best player. And perhaps the Masters final was... I know he'd already lost to him in the final in Belfast, but that was close. He took a real thumping in the Masters final last year, and I think it's really affected O'Sullivan's overall psyche. And that seems to me like the most obvious explanation. He may have something else. I mean, I know there was that whole bizarre dispute over him saying it was for... not for personal reasons. Well, of course it's for personal reasons, because everything's personal reasons. But that, to me, is the only explanation I can think of as to why someone who has won the Masters seven times and could win it again quite comfortably has decided not to take up that opportunity.
Well, look, he's a free agent. He can play whatever he likes.
Sure.
The only thing I would say is I hope we don't spend all week talking about the fact he's not there. I'm sure it'll be addressed at the start. We've addressed it at the start of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a tendency... some sections of the media to kind of rely on Ronnie a little bit to get, you know, column inches and airtime or whatever. He's not there. 16 players are there, and we're going to start talking about them now. And the first, we're going to go down in draw order. So this is not the order of matches to be played. It's the order of the draw. I think the match at the top is probably potentially the match of the round. When the draw was made, it was a bit of a mouthwater. Judd Trump, Sean Murphy. I'll start by saying this. This should be on first. This should be the Sunday afternoon opener. It's the defending champion. It's a cracking game. It's not. It's on the Tuesday. But anyway, it's still a great match.
It usually is the defending champion, isn't
it?
Most years it is.
And I don't see any reason why it isn't, but anyway, that's not
I would have thought on a Sunday afternoon it would have been the ideal thing to kick it all off with. When I think of these two, actually, I think of 2013 and that quarter final they had at the Crucible. That was just a wonderful, wonderful match, and that final afternoon was just so absorbing. So let's hope for something similar to that. Trump, I guess, is going to be disappointed with what happened to him in the UK, because he'd spoken very publicly about how he wanted to complete the set in 2019 of winning all of the big three titles, and went down to a hugely, hugely surprising defeat that nobody could have seen coming. So now he'll want to start the new year and put that right as quick as he can. Of course, he's also had another surprise defeat since then in the qualifiers in Barnsley just before Christmas. But this is a problem we're going to have here. It's so hard to call all of these games, because it's not like you're looking at this guy's in great form, this guy not so much. Because of the way the circuit is now and the fact that the rankings are constantly updated and they're based on so many tournaments, everyone pretty much is going in some sort of reasonable form. Murphy, of course, started the season so fantastically well, and he sort of seems to do it over the last few years in bursts. He'll have a few great months, then a few where he's not so great, and then he'll have a few great months again. So maybe it's time for him to start another really good run.
I think what's impressive about Trump is, and there's a lot of things impressive about him, but he didn't see becoming world champion as, right, I've done it now. This is the one thing I wanted to do. It's done. Mark Williams, of course, when he won his third, as we know, went on a sort of, a booze up for a year, which is fine because, of course, he was late in his career. It was a bonus.
And he was old.
And he, well, absolutely, former world seniors champion. Yeah. but, of course, Judd... he hasn't seen, he's sort of drawn a line under that, and clearly now just wants to win and win and win, and he has done. He's world number one. He's won like three ranking titles this season. Okay, the UK was a slip up, but just in golden form, and clearly of all the players here, he's got to be the man to beat.
Yeah, and the two players who were famed for that attitude were Davis and Hendry.
Yeah.
I mean,
they did okay.
They didn't do too badly. You know, well, Steve only won the Masters three times, so you know. But I mean, that's what they were like. I mean, and they'll tell you that now. That was just so much their mentality. Okay, I've won that, and even like by the next day, it's forgotten about. I think there was some story once about Steve winning the tournament, going back and practicing later that night. I don't know if it's true or not, but it sounds perfectly plausible. Nobody else has really had that attitude, you know. John Higgins didn't really quite have it. I don't think Ronnie's ever had it. Mark certainly never had it, you know. I mean, he just takes everything in his stride anyway. And that's not a criticism of those guys at all, because they've all had great careers. But Judd really seems to have that mentality. I'd love to find out from him what was the actual turning point. And I don't think we've quite established that yet, because he'd be the first to acknowledge his attitude. Not that he had a bad attitude before, but it's taken a real twist over the last year, 18 months or whatever. He seems to have reinvented his approach and his attitude. And I'd love to find that out. What exactly was the moment that triggered that? Or was it a more gradual thing? So yes, as you say, he just wants to go on and build more and more on what he's achieved over the last 18 months or so. And of course, he's only 30 years of age. He's one of the youngest players in this tournament. So plenty of time.
I guess the only thing is, though, and you mentioned the UK, which was a surprise. These are the tournaments, ultimately, you are measured by, these really big ones.
Sure.
So if he were to, and losing to Sean Murphy is not any disgrace at all, obviously, but if he were to lose this match and bow out early, then it doesn't take long these days for people to start saying, well, okay, he's won like the Northern Ireland Open, whatever, but he's not won, you know, he's not got through the first round of the Masters.
But isn't this a compliment to him? Because this reminds me a lot of Michael Owen, who, you know, was such a great goal scorer. He'd go like two games without scoring. It's all finished for him. He's lost his pace. Tiger, more than anyone, Tiger Woods, I mean, you know, he'd have like a third and a fifth in a couple of tournaments. What's wrong? What's Tiger's slump all about? Yeah. So it's a real compliment to you if it doesn't take more than a couple of defeats for people to start writing you off and saying, oh, you know, what's gone wrong with this game? Nobody has dominated the game over the course of a year or 18 months the way Trump has since maybe the 90s. I mean, the last time I can remember anyone having so much success over a period like that of a year, year and a half, was Stephen Hendry, maybe about 96, 97, sometime around then. I mean, other players had great runs, Higgins, Williams, O'Sullivan. But in terms of consistency of performance, all the titles he's won came as near as he can possibly come to winning the Champion of Champions as well. I don't remember anyone having a run like that for more than 20 years.
Yeah, I'd argue Mark Selby possibly got close to it, but anyway, we'll come on to him shortly.
Yeah.
Because the next match is actually the one that does open the Masters, and it's Ding Junhui against Joe Perry. Now, of course, this is interesting because had this been played even 2 months ago, you'd think, well, you know, Joe Perry's got a really good chance here because Ding's in the doldrums. But that UK Championship victory has changed everything.
Yeah, it has. And that's the thing with Ding. We've said it so many times on podcasts. You know, he's so unpredictable. There's almost no point talking about him on these because he can be going through a really bad run and then suddenly win a big event. And likewise, he can win a string of events and then lose to Michael Walsley in the first round of the World Championship. It can go either way with him. So it's almost, you know, pointless sort of predicting what's going to happen with him. Joe Perry, though, well, he's 45 years of age, back in the top 16. He's not played in the Masters, has he, since he got to the final 3 years ago.
Which he came close to winning, people
he did.
Forget. He was very close.
Yeah, no, and it wasn't like he got steamrolled in that final. He certainly had his opportunities. He's 11th on the one-year list, and that shows you how consistent he's been this season. Got to the semis in Belfast, was obviously the high point. Got to a quarter-final out in China, but it was a bit of an anti-climax, actually, because he'd beaten Judd Trump. So to then go out in the next round was, you know, a bit of a low on which to end it. But he's been fantastic at getting through the early rounds of tournaments. I think in all the completed ranking events, he's got through at least two rounds in each of them. I know he's failed to qualify now for one of the events that the qualifiers were played for. But that's remarkable consistency. Of course, in the first round of those events, he wasn't playing Ding Junhui. He was playing much lower ranked players. But again, what can you say about Joe Perry, someone who's been a pro for almost 30 years? He's never really had, you know, a dreadful slump, you know, where he didn't look a dangerous opponent.
He always
anymore.
Seems to be like on the either on the verge of being in the top 16 or just outside. He's one of those, you come to the sort of the cutoff for the crucible, and he's like, he probably needs to win two matches in Beijing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
and probably will do. Very often does.
He's been as high as number 8, of course, you know, which is a remarkable thing. But one of those players who, on his day, you know, if he's on any kind of form at all, Looks like he belongs among the very best players in the game. And remarkable to still be performing at that level at the age of 45. So very tough one to call. I mean, you never know with Ding, because he kind of seems to fall in and out of love with not so much the game as the work that goes with it. He seems very devoted to his young family and everything. So how much work has he put in over the last couple of weeks? I suppose we might find out on Sunday afternoon. But if it's been any at all, and he picks up where he left off in York just before Christmas, then he obviously goes in as a very big favourite to win that match, and a very strong contender to win the Masters again.
He played fantastic in York, and I think everyone was really pleased to see it. Maybe not Steve Maguire so much, but anyway, it was good for the game, certainly. Okay, well, Mark Selby, I mentioned, of course, Ali Carter, who wasn't in the tournament, and then he's good pal Ronnie O'Sullivan not entering. He's not only got a place, he's guaranteed 15,000, and who knows, you know, what a story it'd be if he went on to win it.
Yeah, and he can take his £250,000 cheque around to Ronnie's house and wave it in his face and, you know, remind him of what happened at the Crucible a couple of years ago. I just have a feeling Ali might win this, you know, because he's not won it. He's one of those players who you feel he's kind of threatened to win one of these big ones for a very long time. But again, someone who's just constantly, you know, there or thereabouts. Again, he's never really fallen off the pace all that much, which is remarkable when you consider everything he's gone through off the table. Someone who's been as high as number two in the world. I mean, you remember that? It's probably about 10 years ago now. But, I mean, what a position for him to be in. Didn't think he was going to be in the Masters. Completely unexpectedly, he ends up in it. In a way, sort of nothing to lose from here. And, you know, to complete the cliche, everything to gain. But he's up against a player who has been absolutely rejuvenated over the last few months. And someone who, again, I think, you know, didn't like the fact he'd been overtaken at the top and lost his number one ranking. And Mark has really knuckled down, and not even just in practice or whatever, because I'm sure he's always knuckling down in that, but the way he's applied himself in the tournaments he's won, because he's not coasted through them by any means. He's had some tough matches along the way in both of those Home Nations events. So, yeah, a rejuvenated player. He's got to go in as favourite, but if you're just looking, if you're, you know, the sort of person who bases these things on hunches, I just have a feeling Ali might have a very special week.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see Selby playing well again in Britain. He obviously, you know, he's a former Masters winner, World Championship, UK Championship. Hadn't won in the UK for a while until the English Open. And he'd been in this sort of slump, and as you say, he'd been overtaken and the limelight had been taken away from him. And then he won that, and then he seemed to almost immediately go back into it again. But then, of course, he won in Scotland. Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, again, we keep saying it, but these matches are very tough to call because, all right, Ali Carter hasn't won a tournament in a while, but it's a sort of event, A, because he didn't think he'd be in it, he'd be bang up for, but also I think it sort of suits his personality, actually, the Masters. It's kind of one table, you know, there's no hiding place. That's the sort of thing he likes. So, yeah, I think that could be a real close one. The next one, John Higgins against Barry Hawkins. We always say this every year about Higgins. You know, he's won the Masters twice, which a lot of people would say was a great achievement, but also made a lot of first-round exits, and it is a little bit feast or famine with him. And Hawkins, he had a strange little time at the qualifying before Christmas. He got through the first one, I think, and then he lost to Ross Bullman in the first round of the next one, which was a big surprise. So his form is in and out at the moment.
Yeah, that's and he didn't play well in that match, actually, against Bullman. You know, he wasn't, like, blown away or anything like that. He really seemed to struggle, which he can do from time to time. Again, it's very hard to say with John for the reasons you outline. I mean, it's just one or the other with him at the Masters.
My theory with him in the Masters, actually, and for years I thought maybe it was the London crowd he didn't like, but that was kind of dispelled with Wembley. I think we know John is a family man. I think he enjoys a good Christmas, John. And I suspect he's coming to be at the Championship League this week, but I'm pretty sure he won't have been practicing every day over Christmas. Now, I imagine most players won't have done. But of all the players who you could sort of imagine practicing, he probably on this list would be number 16 of the players who were, like, really putting the work in. So maybe he's just not quite sharp enough in the new year.
And fair enough, he's earned that right. Yeah. You know, he's nearly 45 now. I mean, he's done so much in the game. So, yeah, I mean, that could be a very good point. We should mention, of course, that the Masters used to be on in February. And he had quite a mixed record in those days as well. So, yeah, hard to know what to say about that one because we know they're both, you know, very capable, very good players. I think we'd all love to see Barry win one of these one of these events just on a personal level because we all know what a great lad he is. And he's done well in the Masters in the past. He clearly likes Alexandra Palace, you know, having been to a final and been close to another one. Yeah, I just slightly fancy him to win it, actually. Didn't John lose in the first round last year to Ryan Day?
6-5, one thing I will say, and this is not speaking out of turn because he said it in a media interview, although I'm not sure it was reported, but Hawkins, I think he lost first round in Scotland, and he said to the guy who interviewed him, He said, at the moment, I can't focus on snooker because I've got other things happening now. I don't know what they are, but that would suggest that obviously at that point, this was a month ago now, you know, there were other things that were affecting him. And of course, it's worth saying with all these players, they've got their real lives to lead and things happening. But we'll see anyway. Maybe the Masters will inspire him. Neil Robertson and Steve Maguire. This is a tasty one.
Yeah. Blimey, two great battlers there. Neil Robertson, again, a player who, you know, was in a genuine slump, actually, wasn't he? And again, a lot of that was to do with off-table stuff. But I don't know about you, but I just had a feeling he was going to win that Scottish Open. And since he has, you know, in a sense, you could say he's never looked back. But actually, you look at his record in ranking events this season. I don't think he's been to a quarter final yet.
Well, it won't affect the Masters, but this Coral Series business, yeah. You know, I think he's just about in the first one. But, you know, the other two big money ones, that he needs success in ranking events. He's qualified for the two European events. But, yeah, he's a little bit off the pace. Of course, it doesn't help when you don't turn up at venues and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he even got Dr. Frame in one of the qualifiers. He turned up late again.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, which is incredible. I think he did that. That was part of his, I don't know, some sort of PR strategy to handle the whole Barnsley thing. I don't know what's going on there. But, I mean, what an eventful first half of the season it's been for him, actually, because, he missed the flight, didn't he, to Riga, as a lot of players did. Yeah. He was ill in another match. So all of those things haven't helped him. And, of course, when he was at the Champion of Champions and everything was fine and, you know, there were none of those issues. I mean, look how well he played there. Mm. So, I don't think we should read too much into the fact that he hasn't particularly done it in the ranking events. I think the World Championship coming into view tends to focus his mind a lot, actually, because I know he's spoken about how he doesn't want to end his career as a one-time only world champion.
Neither do I, but I'm not one at all.
So. Listen, I'd love to end my career as a one-time only, you know, first round winner. But anyway, settle for beating you in a few games of pool. But it's 10 years this year since Neil won the World Championship. So, you know, obviously people will talk about Alex Higgins. Yeah. Because as we know, they're very similar characters, of course.
Well, Neil could bring his baby on.
His baby, of course, was born just after he won it the first time around. So he'd be 10 this year. Look, again, Neil is someone who is just so dangerous at all times, really. Even when he was in that bit of a slump he was going through, you always felt he was going to snap out of it at some point. He loves the big events, absolutely thrives on them. And, you know, his record in them maybe isn't quite as good as he would like it to be. So, look, he'll have knuckled down big time. I mean, I think he gets stuck in over Christmas. He tends to go to, it's Norway, isn't it, that his wife is from. So he tends to go back there over Christmas, but I think he comes back on his own generally a couple of days after Christmas Day and gets stuck right in.
But Maguire's been in the UK finals, so
he's
resurgent as well.
Yeah, and again, someone kind of repeating myself now, even, you know, when he wasn't playing particularly well, Stephen was always very, very dangerous and someone you didn't want to find yourself up against in the draw. You know, a great run for him in the UK final. We know that he can perform on the big occasions. He's not been in a Masters final, of course, has he? And so his record in it isn't particularly great. So we're going to repeat ourselves. Very, very close one to call. I think it'll be a closely contested one. And but you just have to favour Robertson to come through it.
Yeah, Maguire is very good at sort of... And I think, this, I don't know whether this is a Scottish thing or not, he's very self-deprecating about his own abilities and his own... sort of almost career, but I mean his career has been terrific by any measure, and he belongs in the top 16. You know, he's been out, he's a little bit like Joe Perry recent years, in and out, but he's still a top 8 player, actually, and he proved that in York. You know, he's got that sort of tenacity that you need, and actually he didn't do anything wrong, did he? He made those two centuries in the final. Diggs made two to win it.
I mean, he's just very, very tough on himself, and you see it often in matches, and I don't think it's helped him over the years that sometimes, look, you're going to miss some balls, you're going to play some bad shots, you're going to have some opportunities that you don't make enough of. And he just gets down on himself too much when that happens. And I don't think that's helped him over the years. Very dangerous opponent. It's the sort of match you can see. When is that? Is that a night match or an afternoon match?
You tell me.
If it's a night match, it'll probably finish about midnight or something. You can see it being a real battle between the two of them. But I just favour Robertson to get over the line.
Okay, well, the next match features the only debutant this year, Dave Gilbert, taking on Mark Allen. Mark Allen, of course, won it 2 years ago, and then lost a thrilling first-round match last year to Luca Brasil. Dave is very much one of the most improved players in recent years, deserves to be in the top 16, and like Jack Lazarski, who we'll mention in a minute, of course, he's got there without winning a tournament, which these days is difficult because the first prizes are so big. So actually he's world number 11, Dave Gilbert. Mm. He's not won a ranking event.
Yeah, but he's been so consistent. Mm. I think it was 8 ranking events in 2019. He got to at least the quarterfinals. And obviously in a number of them, he went a good deal further. I think he could win the Masters, you know, because, you know, you can knock on the door for a very long time without it ever opening. But it tends to at some point. You know, if you keep getting on to so many finals, look, like Ryan Day, for example, was in a lot of finals. It generally happens if you keep getting that close that eventually, no guarantees, but eventually you do get over the line. And it's funny, isn't it? A number of players have actually won the Masters before they've won a ranking event. McManus did it. Selby did it. So why not Dave Gilbert to do it? And of course, I mean, the World Championship makes a massive difference to him now, because now he's had that experience of... you know, having a big, deep run in one of the very biggest events. He got to the one table stage. He wasn't fazed by it at all, actually, because he started the semi-final, you know, really, really well. So I just have a feeling that this might just be the time for Dave. Funnily enough, it comes off the back of a dreadful week in Barnsley in the qualifiers, where didn't Jordan Brown beat him twice?
Yeah, I think the thing with Dave that I've noticed is, like, he's sort of inconsistent. Like in Scotland, we saw this. He beat Judd Trump. He played really well.
Yeah.
And he genuinely did. You thought, yeah, this is a proper world-class player. He deserves to be where he is. And then the semi-final, the next day against Mark Selby, he sort of fell apart. And whether there was a hangover from the final in Crawley, I don't know. But to win the Masters with such a tough field, you've got to basically put together four really good performances in a row.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder, does he really, really feel comfortable at the highest level? You look at someone like Kyron Wilson, who became a top player maybe 4 or 5 years ago. He never seemed to have any doubt at all that that was where he belonged. With Dave, sometimes he almost seems a little too humble. Like there's a little voice in his head that's saying, you know, what are you doing? You know, you at this stage, playing these players and beating these players and appearing this late in tournaments. I may be completely wrong about that, but it's just a sense I get from him sometimes. And he's able, obviously, to put that to one side a lot over the last few years because of the results he's had. He's massively overachieved, because I don't honestly think any of us saw him as someone who was ever going to get to this stage. And I mean that as a compliment to him, because he's made the most of his ability. He's really knuckled down over the last sort of 5 years or so, and has been perhaps the most improved player on the circuit in that time. So I guess it follows that if I'm saying I fancy he might win the Masters, then it follows that I have to tip him to win that first round match.
What I like about Dave is he's had a real job, which is quite unusual, because you can make a living from snooker from a young age, because he dropped off the tour, was working for his dad's sort of farming company, and you know, it was tough and not well paid, and he is genuinely grateful for the way snooker's changed and the opportunities. You know, the game is not without its complainers and its moaners, but he's not one of them. Despite his sort of angry farmer, you know, persona, he'll mean a lot to him to be in this. He's watched it all these years. Mark Allen, of course, won it 2 years ago, so it's a tough one. Again, he's, you know, it's no surprise if Mark Allen is in a final, but I suppose consistency a little bit of an issue for him as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, equally so, it's no surprise when he goes out early in a tournament. It's the way he plays. I mean, he plays such an open game, and he can be a bit streaky as well. So, again, just a very difficult player to predict.
It's funny, though, because at the Championship League and yesterday, there's so much time between matches that players end up sitting around talking all sorts of nonsense, which we also join in with. Mm. And there was a discussion about rule changes, and some of the players were saying, oh, yeah, what we'd like is you have to hit a cushion after every shot, you have to hit a cushion. I was thinking, Mark Allen, the way he break builds, because he's so compact, ever hits a cushion.
He'd be off the tour.
Exactly, he'd be in the Q school. Anyway.
I don't see the point in that rule, incident.
Oh, no, but
it's never going
to
happen.
So. But there was 2 hours to fill, so we had to talk about something.
Yeah.
You mentioned Kyron Wilson, and of course, Jack Lazowski was a debutant last year. Now, I saw Jack before his match last year. I think he played Ding, didn't he?
That seems right, yeah.
And he was very, very nervous.
He looked
like someone who thought, I shouldn't be in this tournament. But hopefully now he's coming for a second time. He won't have those feelings. You know, again, he's came very close to winning in Scotland. You know, he beat John Higgins in that tournament. He won that terrific semi-final with Mark Allen and, you know, gave Selby a real good match. And again, it would be great to see him. I mean, you say knocking on the door. He's in a very similar position, but he's playing one of the real great match players in Kyron Wilson.
Yeah, I'd love to see Jack win a tournament, because I think if you were making a list of the nicest people in all of sport, never mind just snooker, Jack would be right up there. He doesn't do himself any favours at times, though, because, listen, we know he's a naturally fast player, but there are shots you have to play that take a few seconds to think about, at the very least. And Jack very often doesn't do that. And I saw that a couple of times, actually, in Glasgow. You know, you're up against a very serious tactician there. He's going to put you in all sorts of knots. And there were a few times I thought Jack got down way too quickly. There's no way he could possibly have thought out the shot. And I feel that costs him at times. I think his mind just maybe wanders off just a little bit. And again, I don't know him well enough to say this, but I wonder, is his concentration, obviously it has to be pretty good to make it as far as he has, but I wonder, is it perhaps quite as good as it needs to be to make it to the very top? You know, this might seem like a strange thing to say for a relatively young player who's been so close. I'm not convinced Jack is ever going to win a tournament. A couple of years ago, I thought he definitely would, but it's been a few times, just little things like that have made me think, does he quite have it to get over the line? Now, of course, now that I've said this, he's bound to win it, isn't he? Again, though, as we've said, a number of players have won the Masters as their first tournament, but well, it'll be a big leap for someone who, as you say, seemed quite nervous when he played there last year.
Well, I think, yeah, I think it's an obvious thing to say in a way, but if you play a really open game, you're going to leave chances if you don't put everything. Now, the match with Mark Allen, there was a huge kind of positive reaction to the way he played. You know, he was knocking in these beautiful pots and so on, and it was a great exhibition of potting. But Mark Allen actually made the point himself. He said, yeah, he's played that well, and he's only beat me 6-5.
So he's
given away all these other chances as well, and I guess that's what he's got to be mindful of. Karen Wilson, you know, is a player who gets stuck, and we saw what the Masters meant to him 2 years ago when he lost in the final and was in tears. You know, he will give it absolutely everything. It's a little bit like the match with Selby, isn't it, in Scotland? You know, he's playing someone who has that game who might be able to sort of wear him down a bit. But it's the sort of tournament, I mean, he's not a new face, Jack, but I guess if you only watch snooker maybe on the BBC, maybe only watch the World Championship of the Masters, you might not have seen much of him. If he were to go a long way in the tournament, actually, he might create quite a bit of excitement. Mm. So it'd be arguably good for the tournament if he did. But I just get the feeling Karen Wilson, if he went close, you would sort of fancy. The last match is a couple of old stages.
Yeah.
Mark Williams and Stuart Bingham. Mark Williams, twice Masters champion. It's been, 17 years since he last won it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I don't know, I mean, Mark, you never know in Mark because he's such a sort of joker, but he sort of gives this impression of not really caring. But he went to the qualifiers, those two tournaments, which he didn't have to enter if he wasn't interested. Qualified for both just before Christmas. We're at Championship League. He won all these matches yesterday, all four of them. He can still do it.
Mm.
He's world number two after, at the end of the day.
Combined age, 87, I think, in this match, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's a thought, yeah. Two guys who have just done unbelievably well to be at the level they have for so long. I do get the sense with Mark that he's maybe sort of rediscovering, you know, a bit of focus and a bit of commitment. As you say, he wasn't meant to be in the Championship League, but a spot opened up and he wanted to take it. I think the main reason for that is probably to sort of get himself tuned up for the Masters. A few positive signs from him. Can you turn it on and off like that? Well, actually, with Mark Williams, maybe you can. But he's someone, he's the opposite of Ding. We said with Ding, it's so hard to predict. You know, he'll have a great run and then go out in the first round, or it'll be the opposite way. Mark tends to, when he's playing well, he tends to keep playing well, doesn't he? And that was what happened to him two seasons ago when he ended the season as world champion. It's a difficult one to call, though, isn't it? I think you just have to favour Williams. I think, you know, the fact that he looks like he's got his mojo back, as it were. I think his greatest asset is his temperament. It's just so good. It's just so incredibly laid back. I've never met anyone in any walk of life who is so laid back and takes everything so much in their stride. So sometimes that can maybe count against him. He maybe finds it hard to get motivated for things. But look, it's the Masters. If nothing else, it's £250,000 first prize if you can do it. So if his motivation is there, and as I say, there are signs it is coming back, then he's going to be very dangerous, and at the very least, you'd fancy him to get through his opening match.
Yeah, what I'd say about this match is I think Bingham's great strength is definitely scoring. You know, he's a very heavy scorer, and he gets in that nice rhythm. I mean, we saw it in China in one of the tournaments this year. It was unbelievable. Williams' great strength has often been actually winning the scrappy frame.
Yeah.
So if the match gets a bit fragmented, you'd favour him. So I think it'd be interesting to see how the early frames go there. I'm not saying Williams are going to mess it around, but if it does get scrappy, I'd favour him massively.
Mm.
If not, if it's a flowing game, then I think Bingham's got a good chance. So they're the matches, and it's become a bit of a cliche, but like a lot of cliches, it's because it's kind of true. They're all sort of finals. That's what the Masters has become now. In the old days, it was the top 16 that was set for the whole season, so you could get players who hadn't won a match who were in it, but now you've got to be playing well to be in the Masters.
Alain Robidoux was in it, having not won a match for almost 2 years.
Well, there you are. A long time ago now. Yeah. So finally then, we've got to try and pick a winner. Now, I'm going to go first, and I'm going to sort of basically go against all the logic that I had earlier on. I don't know why I feel this. I just think John Higgins might win it. I think that, as I say, it's feast or famine with him. But it doesn't always have to be famine. And, you know, he has won it twice. He won 14 years ago was his last one, the last one at Wembley Conference Centre. And put it this way, if he were to win it, that's not a shock, is it? You know, he's the sort of player that, you know, he's a proven winner in the big events.
Well, he's been in the World Final the last 3 years.
Exactly. Yeah. He seems to, these days, sort of comes good now and again.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there's no one in the tournament he fears. Yeah, I'm going to say John Higgins.
I think the whole Masters record has got into his head a bit because he talks about it a lot.
The point is, when anyone interviews before the tournament, they bring it up as well. So it's there immediately.
So if he gets through the first couple of matches, I mean, he'd have to beat Hawkins, obviously, and then beat either Selby or Carter. If he finds himself in the semi-finals, 25 years, incidentally, after he first got there, which, he was 19 years of age then. Fair enough. Look, I mean, you can point to any of them and make a case of. I'm going to make the case for Dave Gilbert because I just think it seems to be, if you become a top player now, that if you keep playing well long enough, your turn generally tends to come around. And I think he is now a top player. He just doesn't have a title to really back it up. And he's been close in a number of occasions. And he had a dreadful run at the qualifiers there just before Christmas. But, sometimes things like that can sort of help to jolt you back into life a bit. And, it's like the Grand National now, isn't it? I mean, you could just... Mm. I could stick my finger on that sheet we have there with the draw on it and you can make a case for any player. But I'm just going to go for Gilbert because he looks to me... I would have said Lazowski a while ago looked like the most likely next new tournament winner, if that isn't too convoluted a sentence. Now I would actually say Gilbert. He keeps coming close. And if he does, I think he'll get there eventually. And just for some reason, it seems to be the number of players win the Masters before they win anything else. So, I'm going to go for Dave Gilbert. But wouldn't it be some story if Ali Carter, after everything that happened between him and Ronnie a couple of years ago, gets in the Masters because Ronnie pulls out and then he goes on and wins?
Well, it becomes a Trivial Pursuit question in a few years, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're basically saying it's a John Higgins Dave Gilbert final, which means it's obviously going to be Judd Trump, Neil Robertson. It starts on Sunday. It's on the BBC and Eurosport. And we'll be back next week, by the way, where we'll be looking back at the last decade in snooker.